Daf Chaf Ches Amud Aleph, 8 lines down from the top, we're studying the opinion, the view of Rava, that Simonim Ado Raisa, and the Gemara says that Rava wants to deal with cases where one person brings evidence that he lost the object, another person brings counter evidence to the effect that he lost the object. Reuven and Shimon both vying for the same lost object, trying to claim ownership. Omar Rava im Timtzi Lomar Simonim Doraisa, and let's skip a line or two here just for a second. Is Simonim v'Simonim? What do we do if two people come forward each with Simonim? So let's just see how the Gemara cuts in, so to speak, in the middle of Rava's sentence. What does Rava mean when he says im Timtzi Lomar? If you will put forth the possible claim or the understanding that simonim adoraisa. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, im timtzi lomar? Ha-poshetle, simonim adoraisa. We just had a sugi yesterday that gave us the final word, the final conclusion of Rava, after he rescinded his original position that simonim adorabonim, that simonim adoraisa. Now he's talking about im timtzi lomar, as if to say, maybe? Ha-poshetle, simonim adoraisa. That's the conclusion of Rava. And the Gemara answers, Mishum de'ikla memer kiddishaninon. That, you know what, it is possible to say that the Pasuk Adrosh Achicha also is referring to Edim. That a person claims this object is his, he subpoenas two Edim into court to testify that they know this was his object. And there's no reliance here on Simonim, meaning that person cannot claim based on Simonim. So Rava, although he is definitely on board with Simonim Doraisa, but, you know, to say that we have a clear-cut drasha from the Pasuk Adrosh Achicha Oso, without any doubts or any reservations that Simonim Doraisa, that's not so. You know, you could always reinterpret the Pasuk as telling you, how do you darsh and how do you investigate whether the person who's claiming the object is indeed a reliable or is a Ramai? The answer is, let him bring aid. So the Ritva here has a very interesting question. How is the Gemara understanding the Im Timtzi Lomar, those three words of Rav? If it really means that Rav vacillates, that's very difficult, because in the discussion earlier on this, on the top of this Amud, Rava proved that Simonim Adorais from the mission of what's called Tachrich Shel Shtaros, Kricha Shel Shtaros. There it was impossible to maintain that Simonim Adorabonon. That was completely slugged up. So we came to the conclusion that the Pasuk of Adrosh Achicha is not Edim, but rather Simonim. And we even strengthen it by saying that Adrosh Achicha be'edim is not going to really effectively determine whether he's a Ramai or not, because the Edim, even if Edim testify on behalf of the claimant, then even if the claimant is a Ramai, we're going to return it. So that's not Adrosh Achicha Darshei, if he's a Ramai, he's not. So Rav is certainly has accepted, and he's committed, he's gone on board to that position, that the Mishnah of Shtaros indicates that Simonim Adoraisa, and the Pasuk Adrosh Achicha is talking about a full-fledged drasha to tell me about Achzoras, you know, about the validity of Simonim. So therefore the Ritva reinterprets this Im Timtzi Lomar, and he assumes even in the Gemara's final presentation here, what that Im Timtzi Lomar is nothing more than an introduction to the question of Simonim and Simonim, or Simonim against Edim, as we'll soon see. One person brought Simonim, the other brought Edim. And we want to know how, once the Torah recognized Simonim and validated Simonim, to whom do we return the object? So it means that, again, the bottom line is that the Mishnah of Tachrich Shel Shtaros proves that Simonim are Doraisa. And then the Ritva sort of backtracks a little bit, and he says, you know what, maybe the proof from Tachrich Shel Shtaros only establishes that if the Rabbanan did accept Simonim and they created the reliability of Simonim, they didn't do it for the reason that Rava had actually presented originally, that it's for the benefit, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, maybe there's another reason why the Chacham made this takana, which we don't know. In any event, let's really get now into the sugya itself. Simonim v'simonim. Two people come forward, and they each offer a simon. What do we do in such a case? Says Rabbi Yaniach. Yaniach means that the lost object should remain frozen, so to speak. No one's going to get it until Elio comes along. Yemunach ad sheyov Elio. The Rambam adds, Yemunach ad sheyoda echad l'chavero. One of them will admit, you know, and confess that, you know, belongs to his friend. You know, this reminds of Shlomo Melch, you know, splitting the baby. Then the Rambam adds another three words, which is a little bit curious about. He says, Osha Yasu Pshara Beneim. That somehow these two claimants could work out some sort of compromise between the two of them. That's not the impression you get here from Rashi. The Pashtus in Rashi, Yaniach Ad Sheyov Elio, is that there's no way, no how that we're going to give back this object or let it out of our possession and let them fight it out, so to speak, and come up with a compromise. No. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, in his Chidushim, which are called Dibros Moshe on Masechta Bava Metzia, he writes that there is a fundamental machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam. The Rambam is of the opinion that Yehi Murach means we don't know. We don't know which of these two owns the Aveda. If they can come forward and work out a compromise between the two, that's fine. Rashi, on the other hand, understands that we're not even sure that the Aveda belongs to one of these two. Maybe there's a third party who's going to come by and he too will give Simonin. And it goes endlessly. Therefore, there's no, shall I say, exclusive claim to these two together as, you know, if they come as one, as one entity. You know, if they have a, a Shtar HaShoah or something along that line. No, Rashi's saying, you know, one Siman cancels the other Siman. It's like, this understanding in Rav Moshe is very similar to if I can add my own, to the famous, you know, classical understanding of Trey U'Trey. You have two Edom against two Edom. So do we say we don't know, or do we say that each pair of Edom cancels out the other eight? You know, the Rambam is saying, you know, you have this guy's Simon and you have that guy's Simon. We don't know who owns the object, but Rashi is saying that basically Simonim and Simonim, everything cancels out, and let's wait for the third person to come along and give Simonim ad infinitum. And therefore we're never gonna forfeit the possession over the object. It's Yemunach Ad Sheyov Elio, that's Rashi's Shita. The Ramban is of the opinion that a Simon Muvhok, of course, is superior to a Simon She'eino Muvhok, even if Simonim Adoraisa, meaning there's a whole range of Simonim, you know, grades. You can grade Simonim. And therefore, when it says Simonim v'Simonim Yaniach, what it really means is that Yaniach until someone could give a better Simon than the other person, more unique, rare Simon, which is a Simon Muvhok. In other words, just like in the case of Simonim and Edim, we award the object to the Baal HaEdim, so too, in the Rashba's language, Simon Muvhok Dino Ke'edim Legabi Shar Simonim. In other words, Rava's approach here is what we call relativity, and we're going to have to see what relative to what, you know, X is inferior relative to Y. In this case, let's say Simonim V'Edim in the next line in Rava is Yinosin Labala Edim, Simonim are inferior as a riot to Edim, even though again we're holding now Simonim Adoraisa. And so too in Simonim and Simonim, says the Rashi, you could also have a relativity theory. One Simon is a Beinoni and the other Simon is a Muvhok. And we're going to see later on a Gemara that would seem to prove the Rashba, but the Gemara is going to talk about the fact that one person came with a siman of the Orech HaBeged, the other came with a siman of the Rochav HaBeged. Orech is superior to Rochav, or for example, Mishkal is superior. We see that there are gradations of siman. Now, The question here is, why don't we apply the principle of Mamon HaMuto B'Safik Cholkim? And to my surprise, I found that Rabbi Kiveger himself asks this kasha, and he wants to suggest that the halach of Yachloku will only apply in a case where the chaluki yecholo lios emes, that it is possible, like for example the case of Shnayim Ochsim Talis, that maybe they both picked up the Talis at the same time. So Rabbi Kiveger wants to suggest that here too, it is possible, it is feasible that the object belongs to more than one person. There are two people who have a partnership in this object. Again, Rashi Sheet, if you remember back in the beginning of Bav Metzia, was that we could only say Yachloku if there's a Vadai, if we know for sure that there's no Vadai Ramai. If there's a Vadai Ramai, then we have to apply a different rule, not Yachloku, but Yehei Munach. Here in our case, there's no Vadai Ramai, because it's possible that it belongs to both of them. So the answer that's given by some of the Rishonim here is that we only apply the principle of Yachloku if it's Shnayim Ochzin, meaning two people are actually seizing, they're possessing the object, they're both holding on to it. But if they're not both Ochzin, then we're not going to say Yachloku. Which is a little bit of a problem, because the famous case of Shoshanaga Sapporo, and we don't know who is responsible for the death of the Vlad, there is not a case of Shnayim Ochazin. But at least in that case, Sumchus will say Yachloku, because since there's no possibility of clarifying, you know, whether or not the Negicha took place while the Paro was pregnant and that killed the fetus, or on the contrary, the fetus died a natural death. There's no way of clarifying it. That's a suffix b'mitzius. That's where Sumchus says Yachlok. But here, we're hoping that Adam will somehow down the line come around and clarify what's going on here. And in such a case, we do not say Yachlok. That goes back to the principle that Shnayim Ochzim Yachlok, but if there's no Shnayim Ochazin, and we're holding out that down the line there'll be some sort of birur because Eidim will come, in such a case we say Yehi Munach. The Machayev of Yachloku is the fact that each one says, wait a minute, I'm holding on to this object, you can't take it out of my possession. But here, the truth is that no one's Oksan over here. The Motzi is the one who's holding on to it. If you take a look at the stencil on Shas of Reb Chaim, he says that in the case of Aveda, there's a mitzvah hashofa. The motzi has to clarify who is the bialim. That's called Darshei Umirami. And therefore, Yachloku is not going to help you anymore. That's not a mitzvah of hashofa, because if there's no, you know, vada'ut, if there's no certainty that he's being mekayim his chiyu, because he's saying Yachloku, so he doesn't know really who belong, you know, who lost the object, who's the true owner. That's not a mitzvah of hashav, and therefore he doesn't have rights to give over, you know, the motzi can't give over the object. Rabbi Simcha Mitvinsk says that when there are two people who are giving simoni aveda, each one is tiny, is claiming that his friend gave him the simonim of the aveda. Let's take Reuven and Shimon. So Reuven's saying, you know why Shimon is able to give the simonim? Because I gave him the object, he saw it, and I gave it to him on a temporary basis, you know, he was a shomer, whatever he was, and now he's lying through his teeth and claiming with this simon that it's his. No, so what are you going to say? So let's award the object to Shimon. Well, Shimon's saying the exact same thing, that, you know, that Reuven barred my simonim, so to speak, and therefore it's not his. So in such a case, we're not going to say Yachlok. Now, in the case of Simonim V'Edim, Rava says clearly, Yinasein Lebal HaEdim, Edim trumps Simonim. Now, the interesting thing is that the Rush here points out that there are two ways of understanding what the Edim, the substance or the content of the Edus of the Edim. Are they saying, A, that they saw the object fall from Reuven? Or are they saying that we only know one thing? We know that Reuven once owned this object. We can't tell you if he lost it. Maybe he sold it to someone else in the interim time. And the Rush comes to the conclusion that even if the Edom admit that they did not see Reuven drop this object and lose it, it wasn't Nafla Mimenu, as long as they can testify, as long as they can testify that this object at one time, at one moment in time, belonged to Reuven, that's enough. And we're not going to come up with a chashash, maybe he sold it, and he's giving Simonim on something that no longer belongs to him. The Rush continues in the same Simon, and he says that Edim are superior even to Simonim Uvhakim. And here's where the Marshal wants to prove that the Shita of Rashi is that Edim are not superior to Simonim Uvhakim. And therefore, if one person gives Simonim Uvhakim and the other person brings Edim, it's Yaniach. It's like the case of Simonim v'Simonim. And basically, according to the sheet of Rashi, as opposed to the sheet of the Rush, Simonim Uvhakim are elevated to the highest level. Namely, they're equal to Edim. Where do we see this in Rashi? Rashi says that when Rava said him Timtzi Lomer Simonim Doraisa, he didn't mean to say that these dinim that Rava brings later on are based on Simonim Doraisa. This is just an introduction to the halacha that's going to come down the line, that in the case of Simonim V'Edim, Rav wants to say that even if Simonim V'Doraisa, but nevertheless Edim are superior, and we give it to the person who has the Edim. Now, if you're going to tell me that Simonim Uvhakim, that Edim are superior even to Simonim Uvhakim, that has nothing to do with Simonim Da'oraisa. Meaning Rashi is presenting this whole Rashi's understanding that the whole presentation of Rava is predicated on Simonim Da'oraisa, Im Timtzalom or Simonim Da'oraisa, and that's not true. Even if Simonim are Darabanan, Rava would still be correct in saying that Simonim V'Edim Yinasin Labala Edim, in a case where the Simonim are Muvhakim. It's obvious from Rashi that Simonim Uvhakim have the same status as Edim. And this is against the Rush, who said that Edim are superior even to Simonim Uvhakim. So the question here is, Rabosai, do we have three different levels? The bottom level is Simonim Regilim, you know, a classical Beinoni. The next level up is called Simonim Uvhakim. And the third level, which is the highest level, is Edim. That's the way the Rush understands it, and therefore he concludes that Edim will trump Simonim Uvhakim. However, according to Rashi, the way the Marshal interpreted Rashi, it's not that you have three levels. You have two levels. If you have the Simonim Beinoni is one level, the lowest level, and then you go up to either Simonim Uvhakim, which are as good as Edim, or Edim themselves. So halacha lemaisa, we're going to have a nafkamina machlokas. If let's say Reuven comes forward with the Sima Muvok, Shimon comes forward with Edim, according to the Rush, in such a case we'll give it to Shimon because he has Edim. Edim are adife mi Simonim Uvhakim. Whereas Rashi, the way the Marshal understands Rashi, would say that in this case he munach because Simonim Uvhakim have the same status as Edim. And truth be told, there's a certain inherent logic within the sheet of Rashi. We have this gravitational pull to Rashi because, you know, if we assume that, as the Rush assumes, the Edom only know that, you know, this object once was in the possession of Reuven, he once owned it, they're not seeing the Nefil itself. So then basically we come back to Simonim in any event, you know. Again, obviously I'm wrong because there is a level called Tvias Ayin, but truth be told, the Tvias Ayin itself is based on Simonim to some extent. You know, when you see something, how do you recognize it? You know, you're saying, well, this object once belonged to so-and-so, to Reuven. How do you know that? This is the same object? You can only know it because of its Simonim. You know, if you subtract the Simonim, so what are you left with? Ah, the answer is some sort of overall general Tvius Ein. Okay, that's what we have to say. Just for the record, the Shach is unwilling to understand Rashi the way the Marshal understood Rashi, and according to the Shach, even Rashi would agree that Edom are superior and Trump Simonim Ufakim. Edom have a pasuk in the Chumash, you know, Pichnayim Edom Yakum Dover. It's not just the Svara that we should rely on Edom, but in the case of Simonim, in Simonim Ufakim, it's a Svara. And a pasuk really trumps a Svara. There are other discussions here in the Achronim about Simonim v. Edom, that Rava paskins we should give it to the Bala Edom. Well, are the Edom bringing Simonim? Do they know about the Simonim? And if, in truth, this object, the way the Edom testify, belongs to the Bala HaEdom, and the reason for that is because he, the Bala Edom, the one who's bringing the Edom, he lost the object, would have he been misyayish from this object? In other words, he says, "Eino mala b'daito shim to Edom." He didn't have in mind that he didn't anticipate that he would find Edom who could testify that this object was his and identify it, and therefore probably in all likelihood would have been misyayish. So what good is Edom? So why do you give the object to the Baal HaVeda? And l'chora, the only answer that you could offer is that even after Yeish, the object doesn't leave the Rishus of the Bailim until someone else picks it up. That's the famous Nesivus. And if no one has gotten it yet, and no one has actually taken it for himself, then we can return it even after Yeish. Is Imadayin lo zochabo acher, is yochalachzerbo mea Yeish. This is interesting. Chazara min hayeish. The Stipler wants to say that there are three time periods. There's a period of yeish, and then there's a middle period of time until we finally get to the third period of time when somebody actually picks up the object after yeish and takes it for himself. Within that inter period of time, there's something called chazara min hayeish. Now, when a person finds an object and it has simonim on it, he really doesn't know that the Bala Veda is misyayish. I mean, he finds an Aveda with a simon on it, so he has no kavanah to be zochen in the Aveda. And therefore now, what we're going to assume is that the Bala Edom, whether he knows about the simonim, doesn't know about the simonim, when he finds out that he has Edom, he's going to be chozer bo min hayeish. So in the case of Edom and Simonim, it would seem that the Bala Edom would come out victorious. He would be awarded the object, even though he's not giving any Simonim, he's just bringing Edom. In fact, he may not even be aware of these Simonim. And the question, if he's not aware of the Simonim, then he's going to be misyayish, because Tos is already back on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, the Ma established that the reason why a person is not misyayish in a case of an Aveda Shesh Bas Simonim is because he's going to hope that he'll be able to get Edom through the Simonim. You know, he's going to ask around, hey, can anybody testify on my behalf on an object that had this and this Simon? But if he's not aware of the Simonim, then he should be misyayish. And the answer apparently is that since, as we said before, the Motzi is not intending, he has no intention at this point, when he finds a Chefet Shesh Bo Simon, to take it for himself, we still have this window of opportunity, of time, in which the Baal HaVeda could be chozer bo from his Yeish, when he finds out that he has Edom. So again, even though he himself, the Baal HaVeda, was unaware of these Edom, and he was unaware of the Simonim, but now that the Edom come forward and testify in his behalf, he's going to be Chozer Bo Mei Yeush, and that's going to all take place before the Motzi is Kone, the object, the Zochen, the object for himself. Rava continues, and he says, Simonim is Simonim V'Eid Echad. Reuven has Simonim. Shimon has Simonim, but he also has an Eid Echad. He has one witness to testify and support his claim. Indeed, the Torah says, "Al pishnayim edim yakum tov." We need two edim. Says Rav Eid, "Echad keman to less adam v'yaniach." Shimon, even though he supports his claim with an eid echad, that's not sufficient evidence to tip the scale in his favor. And if we go back to a teku situation and a stalemate, and we apply the principle of Yehe Munach. And here we have a tremendous machlokus rishonim about the status of Eid Echad Be'aveda, because the Rosh is of the opinion that in a case of simonim v'simonim, dafka in such a case, Eid Echad is completely worthless. But if a person finds an aveda, and one person comes to testify that I know who is the owner of this object that you found, the Ran's of the opinion that we believe the Eid Echad. There's no reason to assume that he's lying, because he's just claiming that the aveda belongs to someone else. He has no vested interests. And furthermore, since there's no muchzak over here, the finder is not holding it on to, you know, claiming ownership. He's just looking for the owner. Therefore, it's not called Eid Echad Lahotzi Mamon Miches Koso. An Eid Echad is not believed to be Motzi Mamon, but here he's not being Motzi Mamon. And that's the Ranshi, but the Ritva's of the opinion that if a witness comes forward to testify that this Aveda belongs to so-and-so, he's not believed. And that Eidus, with regard to Aveda, should be classified and defined by the universal standards of Eidus, the requirement of two Eidim. Eid Echad is not believed in Dine Mominus. But within the Ran's frame of reference, where an aid is believed to say that I know it belongs to so-and-so, here our sugya excludes or invalidates the Eid Echad, because the Eid Echad is coming to support the claim of someone. And that claim of the someone who's the Baal Eid Echad is counted by someone who has simonim. And since according to Rava, simonim are sufficient even on a derisa level to return an aveda, then the Eid Echad can't tip the scale and undermine the simonim of the other person. So Reuven brings simonim, and even though Shimon has both simonim and an Eid Echad, that's not strong enough to overpower the simonim of Reuven, because Reuven's simonim are enough to give him a valid claim. It makes him into a quasi-muchzak. Now the Rosh writes that Bala simonim She'ed made kenegdo, that if Reuven brings simonim, but there's an aid testifying against him, is tzarch li shav alahakish se'ed. The Rosh says in the same Simon Yud Gimel that we've been quoting, that the, I call him the nitba almost, I mean the one who's coming under attack by the aid echad, he has to take a shrua to be machish the aid and to establish that it's his. Because that's just an application of a universal rule that Eid Echad is Mechayev Eishvua Kenegdo, to be Machish the Eid. Now, if Reuven takes that Shvua to be Machish the Eid of Shimon, then the halacha becomes Yeimunach Hachiyov Elio. In other words, here are the two alternatives. If Reuven is unwilling to take the Shvua to be Machish the Eid, then we award the Aveda to Shimon, who has an aid to support him. And when the Gemara here says that they're equal, you know, Reuven and Shimon are equal, even though Shimon has an aid echad to support him, that Yehemunach would apply if Reuven went ahead and took a shvua to be machish the aid. That equalizes everything. But if Reuven is unwilling, or whatever it is, to take that shvua to be machish the aid, in that case, the Rosh insists that even Rava, who said that, you know, Eid Echad command a lesser dummy, that's only because of the Akoshas Hashvuah. If there's no Akoshas Hashvuah, then Eid Echad is enough to tip the scale in favor of Shimon. And that, in a sense, is the Rosh is going a step further than the Ran. The Ran says that if there were no simonim whatsoever, the Eid Echad would be believed. There's no reason to suspect that he's lying. whereas the Ritva says, no, Eidecha does not believe in Dini Mamas. But in a sense, the Rush is a further extension of the Ra. He's willing to say that Eidecha is believed even against Simonim, calls man that there's no Akhasha Sa'id with a Shvuah. Whereas the Ran was of the opinion that Simonim and Simonim rise, you know, they elevate us to the highest level of teku of a stalemate, and the Eid Echad is not powerful in this case. There's no question that the Eid Echad becomes powerless. He's very powerful and authoritative and reliable if there are no Simonim, but against Simonim he's not meaningful. The Rush is assuming that Eid Echad is meaningful even against Simonim. The only thing is that there's such a thing called in Dini Mamonis that applies here in Aved as well, of Hakhosh Sa'id with a Shvua. The Nebuki Yosef is of the opinion that a Baldin is not Makhish the Aid through a Shvua, lest that Hakhosh Sa'shvua will win him the case and becomes victorious and he will hold on and achieve mammon, then the shvuah is meaningful to be machash the aid. But here, how could the Rosh possibly say that the Baal HaSimonim against the Baal Eid Echad is going to take a shvuah to be machash the Eid Echad, and yet at the end you're going to say Yemunach Ashiyo Velio? And the machlokas here might be dependent upon another machlokas. You remember we discussed the case of Simonim v'Simonim, and what happens, the two claimants, each one with his own respective Simon, would work this out as a pshar. The Rambam says that's fine. Rashi says no, it's always going to be a munach. So Nebuki Yosef really holds like Rashi, that if you have a suffek whether this aveda belongs to a third party perhaps, then, and that's Rashi Shita, so you have Simonim and Simonim, but maybe a third party is going to come in tomorrow, then we don't have any reason or rhyme to say that there's a Shvuas Eid Echad, because it's possible that even after the Shvuas Eid Echad is implemented, it doesn't matter, because maybe it belongs to a third party. Halacha that Eid Echad is Mechayev Shvuah is contingent on the part that there's a Tviyah. If there's no Tviya, there's no Shvuas Eid Echad. Eid Echad is only meaningful to Mechayev Shvuah because the Eid Echad comes to support a claim, or what we call a Tviya. In this case, the one who's bringing the aid is not really, he's not really a Toveha. Toveha means someone who, you know, who's a Bailim here. He's not really the Bailim because, as we said, according to Rashi and Simonim, maybe it's an Adam Shlishi and it's an open-ended ad infinitum. The Rush, on the other hand, holds like the Rambam. The Sufik is limited to Reuven and Shimon, both of whom are claiming this Aveda with respective Simonim, and therefore each one is really a Toveya. There's no third possibility here. And if one of those Tovim bring a support with an aid, that aid is Mechayev Shvuah. And even if after the Shvuah is taken, he, the one who took the Shvuah, is not going to be awarded the object, nevertheless the Shvuah is going to be meaningful in the sense that it's not the object, the lost object, is not going to be awarded to the other guy who has an Eid Echad to support him. Rava continues, Eide Ariga v'Eide Nefila. This Akash is between two Eidim that testify on behalf of Reuven, that Reuven wove the Beged, whereas Shimon brings two Eidim that testify that he, Shimon, dropped the Beged. Tinos ein li Eide Nefila. Rava says, we tip the scale in favor of the Eidei Nefila. Why? De'aminin zabune zabna. That we can assume that the person who created this Beged, and once owned it for sure, he sold it. Umi inish achrina nofal. And from this second person who purchased the Beged fell. So the lokeach, with his Eide Nefila, is believed. Of course, the premise here is that we'll call him Shimon, who supported his claim with Eidei Nefila, recognizes Reuven as the original owner. I mean, what would be if, let's say, Shimon says, you know, I got access to this beged. You know, he doesn't necessarily recognize the Reuven as the seller, the original owner of the beged. The Rif writes that the Eidei Arigei Nefila case, we give it to the Eidei Nefila because we say that Zesha Arages HaBeged Mochra Li Acher. We assume, as we saw in the Gemara, that the Oreg, Reuven, sold it to someone else. V'igia liyodo shel zeh, and it eventually somehow came into the hands of the person who brings the Eidei Nefila. U'mimenu nofal. Which means that according to the Rif, even if the person who brings Eidei Nefila doesn't recognize the other person, this Reuven, who wove the beged, nevertheless, it's very possible that the Oreg sold it to somebody, and that somebody sold it to someone else, and it eventually came into the hands of Shimon. And that's enough for Shimon to support his claim with Eidei Nefila. There's a whole suffix in the poskim. What happens if somebody finds a kind of a beged that generally is, you know, it's quite likely or quite common statistically that people would lend out that beged? So one brings Eidei Ariga, one brings Eidei Nefila. Should we say in this case we'll give it to award the object to the one who brought the Eidei Nefila? Or maybe we should be Choshesh that the Oreg was the one who lost the object. It's his. When I say he lost the object, I mean to say that it was a loss of the object to him, but who actually dropped the object, that was Shimon, because Shimon borrowed it from Reuven, the owner of the object. So, true, the Eidei Nefila testified that it fell from Shimon's hands, but Shimon himself was just a borrower. He was a shoel. And in such a case, it's interesting that according to one day, or one opinion, the poskim, the Bach is of the opinion that we should say in this case, Yei Munach, we should not give up the object until we clarify who is the real owner. And if let's say the person who has Eidei Nefila should be considered the Muchzok in the Beged, then we understand that the person who brought Eidei Ariga is the Motzi, and we should apply the principle of Hamotzi Mechaver Varaya, and therefore the one who, Shimon, who's supported by Eidei Nefila, should be believed to say that he purchased the object. But other Achronim say no. If it's Dvar Masuyim Lishael, you know, things that are lent and borrowed back and forth, then in such a case, we have to leave the begin in the hands of the Motzi, Yei Munach, until we can clarify who owns the beged. The Ravid here explains that the Eidus on the Ariga Sabeged is not a proof that it's his, because it's very possible that this was a professional Oreg who was in the manufacturing business and in the selling business, Shehu Oreg Es HaBegodim Kedei L'Mochran. In other words, it seems from the Ravid that he's learning our sugya of Rava, that the reason why the Eidus of Ariga loses out here in this case is because the Oreg was a professional Uman who weaves begadim in order to sell them. But let's say in a normal case, not in the case of a professional Oreg, a professional seller who's marketing his products, but rather the Eidim testify that so-and-so owned an object. Maybe he created the object, but he wore the object. He wore this garment. The other one, let's call him Shimon, he brings Eidim that it fell from his hands. According to the Ravid, In this case, Rav would agree that we don't award the object, the garment, to the Eidei Nefila guy, but rather to the Eidei Levisha guy. Because in a normal situation, we're not worried about Mechira. We don't assume the possibility and, you know, jack up the percentage, statistical probability of Mechira. So the Raivin is really restricting this sugya here in a very profound way, assuming that it's a professional oreg who sells his products. But other than that, barring that, in a normal situation, we will not give it to the Eidei Nefila. And this again is a little bit similar to what we saw in the Achronim about a beged that's asui lahashilam. Meaning, why did it fall from Shimon? Not because Reuven sold it to Shimon, but simply because Shimon had borrowed it. And perhaps that's what the Ravid is saying here. I don't know. The Ritva disagrees. He says that even in a Stam case, just a regular case, we award the Beged to the Eidei Nefila guy, which means, as the Gemara says, the Amirin Zabuni Zavna. It doesn't have to be a professional oreg who's in the business and he sells his products. No. If Shimon produces Eidei Mechira, I'm sorry, if Shimon produces Eidei Nefila, then he gets it because we assume that he's the owner who dropped it and lost it. Then Rava says, Midas Orko, Midas Rochvo. How do we give grades to simonim in the case where, let's say, one person can tell you that this garment has a certain specific length, the other one could say he could tell you exactly its width. Which simon is superior and trumps the other one? Tinasein limidas arko. Why is midas arko, the length, more convincing as a simon then midas rochbo? And the Gemara answers, the midas rochbo sha'urei kamishayrle. When it comes to the rochav, it's possible that the idea, you know, the knowledge of the measurement of the rochav, of the width, is not a proof at all that this is his beged. It's very possible that the bala beged stood and wore this beged, and his friend was able to be Mishair, he was able to guess, just by looking at it, what is the mid of the Rochav. But Midas Arko lo Mishtairle, to know the exact length of the garment, that's not something that you can guess just because you saw it. The person who's giving you that information, he's so specific, he can tell you the Midas Arko, he is the true Bala Begin. He has given us a superior Simon. Now, if these begadim are like our talisos, then what you do is, misatfim, we wrap ourselves with the orech of the beged, you know, the taller length of the beged, the rochav. So the metzias that we're talking about with regard to a talis is such that there's part of the talis that's wrapped around a person's body. Correct? And then there's the part of the talus that hangs down behind him. Or let's say over his back. The part that hangs over his back is called the rochav. In other words, the talus is sort of rectangular in shape, and the breadth of the talus, the width of the talus, is something that hangs on the wearer's back. And that's something that anyone could see. And it's no big deal to guess the rochav. But the length of the talus was covering his whole body. Again, most of us don't cover our whole body with a talus, but you could, in theory, do so. And if you did so, it would be the length of the talus. So it's harder to see, you know, when you're looking at someone wrapped and his body is wrapped in a talus. It's much more challenging to try to guess and gauge the length of the begum. But the width, the rochav is, or the breadth, if you want to call it that, is seen from the back. You just look up and down and you can see it. And that's what we have here in Rava. Rava goes on to say, Midas Arko Umidas Rachbo Umidas Gamov. So one person, we'll call him Ruvain, gives both measurements. He can tell you the breadth and the length. And Shimon comes along, and he is able to give you Midas Gamov. Now the word Gamov means the combined measurement. Like from the word Gam, this and that, means he can give you both the length and the breadth. And this word Gamov comes from the from Yevanit, from the word Gamma, which is the which is a letter that looks a little bit like a Chaf Sofis in the Hebrew, and basically it means you have a line and a 90 degree angle from another line. They're two lines, like an L kind of shape. So that's the gamma, which is made up of both the length and the breadth, or the width. And Rava says, Inosin Lemidas Arko Virachbo. Meaning the one who's giving the gamov, he's being mishayer, he's sort of gauging the entire, you know, the entire shetach of the object. But, you know, somebody who's so meticulous that he can tell you exactly how to break it down, you know, this is the exact length, this is the exact width. He's someone who had a very intimate relationship with the object. It's been with him for a long time, and he's able to detail it by breaking it down into its component measures. Now, Rava goes on in the same vein, and he says the following: Midas Arko, Midas Rachbo, Umidas Mishkolosov. One person could tell you the length and the breadth of this garment. The other one could tell you the weight of it. Is he not saying Lemidas Mishkolosov? I mean, I was a little bit surprised by this because I didn't realize that anybody would weigh a garment. Is that something that I'm missing? You know, who knows anything about the weight of the garment? I don't know if you ever met somebody who weighs his cloak. But in any event, if he did so, no one else in the world could know the weight of the garment, presumably. And somebody might look at you and he could see you wearing a garment and maybe begin to guess the length and the breadth, but only the owner of the object would be so intimately acquainted with the object that he could tell you the weight of the object. That's what I can tell you here. I can't say more. Now we get to the case of someone who finds a get, and Rav is still telling us, who omer simone I get, the he omer simone I get. Keep in mind that both the Baal and the Isha have seen the get in this case. That seems to be the case. Now, the Baal saw the get because he commissioned the writing of the get. It's his get. In the case of the Isha, how could she have had any access to this get so that she would have seen it and now she could identify the get? The only possible answer to that question is that she received the get from her husband. And that's exactly what she's claiming. Is he not saying la? Her proof to the fact that the get was already delivered to her is, otherwise how would she know any of its unique marks, its identifying marks, its simonim? The fact that the husband knows the simonim, that's not a chiddush, because he had the get written on his behalf. He commissioned the writing of the get. His knowledge does not support his claim that he lost the get. The Gemara asks, B'mai, what kind of a simon is she offering to identify the object, the get, as a simon? Ilema b'minas archo v'rochbo. You know, we're not talking now about garments that come in all different sizes. Dil b'hadi d'noket lechazise. you know, a get generally has a certain length and width, and she saw it when the Baal was holding the get, so she got an idea, and she figured out, she was able to gauge and guess exactly what the, you know, the length and the width of this document. Most people know, you know, this standard is A1, A2. Therefore, there's no proof that she actually had the get in her hands. Ella nekev yeshbo b'tzad os ploni. It must be that she's saying something very unique about the get, an identifying mark, which you could only know if you had the get in your hands. You can't see this from a distance. There's a small hole that's in, and she can identify exactly next to which letter in the get it is. It must be that she received the get, and she meticulously became acquainted with the get, and that's why she can identify this very profound siman. So the Gemara clearly rejects the possibility that we would return the get to the Isha simply because she can provide the length and the width of the get. There are two shitos in the Rishonim as to what the Gemara is rejecting. According to the Shitas HaRush, the Gemara is rejecting the width and the breadth, the width and the length, just like back in the case of Misa Sabal and Chav Zayin Amid Beis, you cannot identify the body, the corpse, based on its measurements. That's not called a valid siman. There may be many people at the same size, there may be many gittin at the same size. That's the way the Rush is going to learn this sugya. However, the Rush is of the opinion that if, instead of saying that the get was long and wide or so forth and so on, if, let's say, she were able to identify the exact measurements of the get, that would be a valid siman. And the girsa of the Rush in our sugya, this is the Rush in Siman Yudalit, not the Rush we did early in Siman Yigimel, is Ilema de Aroch v'gotz, which means that if you'll tell me that she gives a siman like the length and the width, that doesn't prove anything. And therefore the Gemara goes on to Nekev, to the hole near a certain letter. The Rush is of the opinion, however, if the Simon would have been a valid Simon, we would return the get to her even if it wasn't the Simon Muvhak. Rabbeinu Peretz, on the other hand, is learning that the Gemara's question, or the Havamina was, Midas Arko, Midas Racho, was that she can give the exact measurements, but Tzimtzum of the Midas. And the Gemara says, Ein Mi, we reject that too. Meaning that a good, solid, bona fide Simon is not enough, according to Rabbeinu Peretz, to return the get to the Isha. Whereas the Rush is saying that if she only gave, you know, general hashara, you know, with the length, then that's not a valid siman at all. But if she gave a good siman, even though it's not a siman muvak, she was able to be mitzamtze midosav, to tell us exactly how long and how wide it is to the centimeter, to the millimeter, you know, that would be reliable, and we would return the get to the Isha. In any event, the Gemara's answer of that she supplied the nekev yeshpo b'tzados ploni, is that a siman muvhak? Now keep in mind that we just mentioned that according to the Rush, you can return a get to an isha even with a regular siman, if it's a good solid siman, even if it's not a siman muvhak. And therefore, in this case of nekev yeshpo b'tzados ploni, the Rush would argue, and it's not just the Rush, it seems that the Rif and the Rama would also agree with that, perhaps also Tosus Dibra Maschil E, that this Simon is, did I mention the Rush here? Let's leave the Rush out for a moment. That according to the bulk of the Rishonim that we mentioned for the Rif, the Rama, and Tosus, it would seem that in order to return a get, you need a siman muvhak. the reason why the Gemara mentions Nekev Yeshbo Bitzados Ploni is because that is a paradigm of a Simon Muvhak. And to be Mater in Issa Torah like an Ashes Ish, allowing her to marry someone else based on this get, what we really need is a Simon Muvhak. That's one shita in the Rishonim. The Rush is of the opinion, however, that you don't need a Simon Muvhak to return the get and to be Mater Ashes Ish. Now, one could have argued that the Rishonim that we mentioned earlier, the Rif, the Rambam, Tosus, that require a Simon Muvhak to return a get, they're of the opinion that Simonim Derabbanan. And the Torah doesn't recognize Simonim unless it's a Simon Muvhak, which is a Doraisa. The Rush on the other end would say that Simonim are Doraisa, and therefore you could return a get even with a Simon She'eno Muvhak. But the answer is no. The Rush writes that even if Simonim Derabbanan, you don't need a Simon Muvhak. And the reason for that is, in the language of the Rush, Rak imabal ibed es hageru motzo odom verotzo lashiva lebal tmura simon is kevon sheyesh chashash shegetz enofal mi odom acher sheshmo kishmo, is then, in order to be motzi from that chashash, we need a simon muvhak. But that's not our case. Our case is not a case where the Baal dropped the get, somebody found it, and now we want to return it to the Baal, assuming that that was the get that he wrote, and that's his get. You know, for that, to go ahead and divorce a woman with such a get, we need to know for sure that this is the same get that the Baal wrote, and this get was written on behalf of this Baal. For that, we need clearly a Simon Muvhak. However, in our case, there's no chashash of gerushin to another woman. In other words, we're not, again, let's just go over this one more time, sorry. If the Baal lost the get, and somebody found it, and we're not sure if this was the get that this particular Baal lost, you have a suffolk now about allowing him to be Megarish's wife with this get, when this get may have been written for somebody else on behalf of a different Baal or a different Isha. And therefore you need a Sima Muvhak. How is our case different? He writes, Ein chashash shel gerushin beget shenichtav l'shem Isha acheres. We're not afraid that maybe this get was written for another woman. The fact that she could identify this get with a simon, even if it's a simon chain of muvok, we know, and therefore, that the get reached her hands. The argument between the Baal and the Isha is who dropped the get. And in such a case, says the Rush, we don't need a simon muvok, even if simonim adrabanan, simon is enough. And here the Rush embellishes his shita by saying that since she is saying that she received the get, we have a principle that a woman is believed to say to her husband, Girashtani, you divorced me. That's based on a chazoka, Eino Isha Me'iza Paneb B'fnei Baila. She would never be bold and brazen and chutzpahdik to say in front of her Baal, you divorced me. So as far as believing her that she indeed was divorced, we certainly believe her, even without the get, just by the very virtue, by virtue of her claim. So returning the get to the woman, in the case where we found the get, is not in any way related to an Issa Torah. In other words, we're not going to be mater a woman that otherwise would have been assumed to be an Ashes Ish. She's going to take this get, which she receives, and she's going to go ahead and get married. But even without the get, we would allow her to get married based on Eino Isha Me'iza Paneh B'fnei Baila. And therefore, the Rush says we're only really involved. What we're judging here, and what we're deciding is to whom to return the get. The Baal says he lost the get. She says she lost the get. And here, even if I sue Simonim Drabanan, since we return any lost object based on a Simon, we can return the get based on the Simon. There's no Issa Torah involved over here, because as we said, she's believed to say that she was Mugureshes. Now we want to get to the Mishnah. Hu Omer Simone Hachut, Vehi Omer Simone Hachut, Yinosein La. Let's say the get was tied up with a rope, a string of some sort, and she can identify that chut. But they used to tie up a get with a cord, and she can identify simon of that cord. She can tell us it's how unique it is, how what color it is, what size it was. I don't know what she tells us about this cord. The Gemara says, "Bimai, can you get more specific? What could she tell me about this rope, this cord? Ilema b'chivara uvesumka, be the white or red. V'dilma b'hadi d'noket le'chazise. Maybe when the Baal was holding on to the get, she noticed the cord, and she could tell even from a distance what color it was. Ela b'midas arko, but rather she tells us exactly the length of the cord. And that's something she could only know if she had some intimate relationship, acquaintance with the get and its cord. Of course, it's a little bit strange here that the Gemara mentions Midas Orach and recognizes that as a good simon. Earlier, the Gemara said that a simon of the Orach HaGet is not a simon. But again, there's got to be a difference here between the get, the document, and the cord. The get itself, which is written on hard parchment, you know, you could look at a distance and try to be Mishai, you could try to gauge what its length is. But in a case of a chut, which is tied around a document in this case, you can't guess from a distance what the exact length of that cord is, and therefore we can return the get to her. Finally, hu omer b'chafisa, Vehi omeres b'chafisa. Chafisa is a chemas ktana, you know, some sort of a jar or a jug, and that's where they would hide things. Is he not saying lo? In such a case, we believe him and not her. We will not return the get to her. My time, why? May that yoda kol madi isle b'chafisa hu demonichle. He has this pouch, and that's where he puts, you know, important documents. You know, everybody has a drawer or something where they keep their important things. She's been married to him for who knows how many years. So it's very easy for her to guess that, you know, this is the bag that he put it into. And she has not supported or established her claim to the get based on the fact that she, you know, she can guess that this, you know, this get was in that bag. The only question I want to raise with you is, what? How do we know that the get should be returned to him? I mean, just because he told you that you found it in a bag, what does that prove exactly? Rabban explains that his simon is that she placed the get in a certain bag. Now, even though you might argue that on a general, you know, that's what she's accustomed to. You know, she puts important things in that bag, that special bag that's, you know, singled out and set aside. But no, a get she wouldn't put into a chafisa. That's not secure enough. She needs the get in order to marry. And if he can identify this get was found in a certain chafisa, then we know for sure that the get should be returned to him. So that's the Ramban. He would never have guessed that she would place the get in that bag where she puts other important documents. But Rabbeinu Yonason is quoted in the Shittim Gubetzes as saying that the case that the Gemara is dealing with is where the Baal identifies the chafisa with its simon. And once we give the chafisa to the Baal, we give anything that's inside the chafisa in this bag to the Baal, and the get is inside the bag. Again, I just want to reemphasize that according to the Rush, in a case where the Baal and the Isha both give simoni a get, and they're not simoni muvhakim, we do return the get to the Isha, even if I maintain that simoni v'drabanan. And one of the proofs that the Rush adduces is from our sugya here about the Chafisa. He says it was in the Chafisa, she says it was in the Chafisa, we don't give her the get, because she knows that the Baal puts all his important papers in that bag, in that Chafisa. It seems that if not for that logic, if not for that reasoning, we would return the get to the Isha, even though the Simon of the Chafisa, the fact that the get was in the Chafisa, that's not a Simon Muvak. You know, people put important documents into bags, so she says it was in a bag. That's not a Simon Muvak. And yet, the implication of Asugi is that if not for the fact that she's been living with him for so long, and she knows that he places all his important documents in that Chafisa, otherwise she would be believed. The Mishnah says, Admasai Chayav Lahachriz. A person finds an Aveda, and he has a Chiyuv to be Machriz, to announce this Aveda. That's a Chiyuv Doraisa, based on the Pasuk, Adrosh Achicha Oso. Right? Adshiyetze Olav Kruz. Meaning, the Baal Aveda, who lost his object, has to know that he's got to look for his Aveda. You know, he hears something, an announcement that arouses him to search for amongst his things, to think that maybe he lost that object. And the question is, you know, at what point can the motzi, the person who finds it, assume that, you know, he announced it for such a long time and in so many public places that the he can assume, the presumption is that the person who lost it would have heard that announcement. And the Mishnah answers, Ad kidei sheyedu bo shechenav. The Gemara is going to explain that the neighbors have to know about it. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Sholosh Regolim. He's got to, every time he comes to Yerushalayim for Aliyah LeRegel, for all three Regolim, he's got to make that announcement. The Achar Regla Achron, and following the last of those three Regolim, whenever he started, you know, the third in the series, Shivas Yomim, he's got to still continue being Machrizit for 7 days. What's the significance of this addition, add-on of 7 days? Kadesh Yelech Lebeso Shlosha V'yachzor Shlosha Yomim V'yachriz Yom Echad. So it takes 3 days for him to get back to check out his, you know, he heard that somebody found a garment, he wants to go back and check in his house if he's missing a garment, or whatever the object was, and then when he sees he's missing it, he's going to come back to Yerushalayim, and he needs another 3 days for that, and on the seventh day, that's when the Hakroza is going to be made. And here it's interesting, Rashi V'yachriz says that the Hakroza is being made by the owner of the object, by the one who lost the object. Ani ibadati chefetz kazeh, I lost such and such an object, and these are my simon. Now it's difficult to translate this Sholosh Regolim into an amount of time, because if he finds something immediately after a regel, then till he goes through three regolim is going to be basically a full year. If on the other hand he found this Aveda right before a regel, and then he starts Zachroz on that regel, let's say before Sukkos he found this object, then, you know, just all he has to do is three regolim. That means he's got Sukkos, he's got Pesach, and he's got Shavuos. So from Sukkos to Shavuos is about 7 months. So that's a much shorter period of time. So there's no flat period of time here for Sholosh Regolim, which might bother us a little bit, because if we're talking about, you know, you've announced it so many times, now you can assume that the Bailam of Messiah, and that should be a function of time. And, you know, to say that a Baal is Messiah over the course of a little bit more than a half a year, I don't know. I mean, there is a rule, Rashi mentions it in Brachas Nunches, that a person's Messiah about a Chefetz that he lost after 12 months, but as we said before, there's no standard here of 12 months. By the way, the Meiri has a slightly different twist on a different take on the Sholosh Regolim business. He says Shema Nenas Velo Ola Beregla Rishon Vasheni. It's quite possible, says the Niri, that the owner of the object was not able to go on Aliyah LeRegel for the first of the three regalim, whatever sequence, or the second. But we're assuming, says the Miri, that by the time you come to a third, that a person will not be constantly in this situation of onus, you know, mitigating circumstances which prevent him to come, so that even three regalim will go by, and he won't be able to come on Aliyah. The Toras Chaim that we've mentioned on many occasions claims that the reason for this takana of Hachrazah Shalosh Regalim is because everybody's going to hear about it. And even if you weren't there exactly to hear the Hachrazah, but Chavrich to Chavrich Isle, it'll be passed on. So on three different occasions, there's this word going around, you know, that so-and-so found such and such an object. By the time that three regalim pass by, everybody knows about this achrosa. In any event, Tosfos and the Rambam write that the Mishnah here is talking about a motzi machrus biyom hashvi le'achar regel, that the seventh day after the regel is when the achrosa is going to be made by the motzi, whereas Rashi says clearly, Ani ibadati, meaning the Baal, the Ma'abed, is the one who's making the announcement. Now, the reason why Rishonim disagree with Rashi is because if the finder is not going to make his announcement on the seventh day, how is the Baal HaVeda, the owner of the object, going to find him? You know, how do they link up and find each other? And it would make more sense, therefore, that it's the finder who's going to make these achrozos in such a way that hopefully the Baal HaVeda will hear about it, know to whom he should turn to get back his lost object. One of the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Shechene Aveda Mai. What does the Mishnah really mean when it says that you should announce it in such a way that the Shechenim should know about it? And the answer is, says this Braisa, Shechene Aveda, meaning in the place where you found it, you know, who are the local people that live within a close radius of that place, that location X where you found the object. My Shechene Aveda, the Gemara says, Ilema Shechene de Baal Aveda, if it means the neighbors of the owner of the object. I Yodale Lezel Hadri Nila, if the finder actually knows who the neighbors of the owner are, then he knows who the owner is. Let him just return the aveda to its rightful owner. Ella shchene makom shenimtzeis bo aveda. But rather, it means those people who live in close proximity to the place where he found the aveda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says shalosh regalim. It's not enough just that the neighborhood knows about it. Uramini. The Gemara says there seems to be a contradiction between our Mishnah and another Mishnah. This Mishnah is in Tainis. You're assuming that it takes 3 days to get back to your house and then 3 days back, and there'll be an announcement on the seventh day. The Mishnah says in Tainis, Bishlosha b'mar cheshvan sholim es hageshom. According to Tanakama, on the third day of Cheshvan, that's when we begin to ask Hashem for rain. What's called Bakashas Gshomim or Shelos Gshomim, and that's for Saint Talum Motor. Rav Gamliel Omer b'Shiva Bo. We have to postpone the Bakasha for rain to give people a little bit more of a time. And b'Shiva Bo meaning on the 7th of Mar Cheshvan. So let's say Yontav ends on the 23rd of Tishrei. So you're giving him 2 weeks to get back to his place before the rain start pouring down. It's Chamisha Soyom Achar Achag. It's actually technically the 15th day after Sukkos. Kedeshi Yagia. So this person who came on Aliyah LeRegel. Yagia Achron Shebi Yisrael Linahar Pros. That gives enough time such that whoever is left in Yerushalayim until after the Chag will arrive at Nahar Pras. Nahar Pras, I think, is called the Euphrates, and that's the furthest point. So you should be able to get to that furthest point away before the rains start coming. But in any event, it's quite clear that we're not talking about a three-day period. The Nahar Pras is the most distant border of the country from Yerushalayim, and it took 15 days from Yerushalayim to reach Nahar Pras. So if, let's say, the Ole Regel would return home, so their return would not be undermined or challenged by heavy rains that would come down. So we're going to postpone asking, praying, petitioning for rain in order to facilitate the ability of the Ole Regel to return home, as far as the Euphrates is far enough, and not be hampered by rains and storms and so forth and so on. Let's delay our bakoshas tefillah. Omer Rav Yosef lo kasha kan b'migdash rishon v'kan b'migdash sheni. B'migdash rishon, during the period of the first base HaMikdash, the Nefishe Yisrael Tuva, there were large populations of Jews in the land during the period of the first Migdash. D'chsiv v'hu, as the Pasuk tells us in Malachim, Yehuda v'Yisrael Rabim kechol asher al hayom l'rov. They were as manyfold as the sand on the beaches. Be'inan kuli hai. Therefore, we need to allow more of a long period of time for these masses of Jews to reach the furthest point, and that takes 15 days. B'migdash sheni d'lo nafish in Yisrael tuva. As we'll soon see in the pasuk in Ezra, there was a very small number of Jews that came back with Ezra, Nehemiah, and Aliyah Shnia at the time of the Bayis Sheni, is therefore lo be'in and kuli hai. We don't need to wait so long. 3 days is enough for any possible person to reach the furthest place away. Now, how do we know that in Migdash Sheni the population was limited? D'chsiv b'hu, Ezra says about the community of Israel that came to Eretzel Kol HaKahal Kechad Arba Ribo Alpayim Shloshmeos Vishishin, that the total number of Jews that came to settle was 42,000. But let me give you the exact number. It was 42,360. So for such a small group, such a small population, you don't have to give so much time to get from Yerushalayim until the furthest point away. And therefore 3 days was sufficient. Again, it could be that what the Gemara has in mind here is that if it's a smaller population, then the distances from Yerushalayim to the border were also cut down. There were also shorter distances. Omale Abaye Rav Yosef Ohaksiv. It says regarding Vayesheni and Ezra, it says Vayeshvu Akonim Valavim Vamashorsim Vamashorim Vashorim Vichol Yisrael Be'arehem. In other words, the population was indeed quite small. As we said before, we're talking about 42,000. But nevertheless, they were spread out in their cities, just like it was in Bayis Rishon. We came into Hochihu, Ipcha Mestabra. If they're spread around, then the exact opposite logic should be true. Migdash Rishon de Nefishi Yisrael Tuver, during the time of the first Bayis, when there were multitudes of Jews, is the Metzaves Alma. You know, the transportation reflected the mass population. The greater the population, the more there were groups of people that were returning from Yerushalayim, obviously. And it was quite common that there were shayoros. There were caravans, so to speak, that went day and night. Is therefore since it was Bain B'Yamama, Bain B'Laila, is Lo Be'in and Kuli Hai. We don't have to require so many days. V'Sagi B'Tlasa Yoma. It's 3 days is sufficient to arrive at the most further, most distant place from Yerushalayim. And the reason for that is Shayoros Mitsuyos Bain B'Yamama, Bain B'Laila. There were plenty of caravans, you know, people traveling along. And they would, you know, they would be able to travel with them. Travel was easy to get from place to place during Bais Rishon. Is therefore they didn't need so much time to reach the border. But although 3 days would be sufficient in the case of Bais Rishon, Migdash Sheni, the Lona Fishi Yisrael Tuva, for Lo Mitzavas Alma, it was very hard to gather together with such a small population, groups of people to join together and frequently wait for the bus, so to speak, wait for the caravan. Therefore, you know, relative to the population, that's how the transportation looked. The Azi Baby Mama. It's very far, hard to find and locate any of these buses, we'll call them caravans, that a traveler could get on anytime during day and night. Like in the major, you know, cosmopolitan areas today, you have all sorts of hop-on, hop-off buses. Cities that are populated by who knows how many million people, but if it's a small group, the, you know, the caravans would have to be found. Is Be'inon Kule Hai. Then, without the help of caravans, we need a much longer time to reach the, you know, the distant border, in this case the Euphrates, and we're going to need a minimum of 15 days. Rava Amar Loshna B'Migdash Rishon, Loshna B'Migdash Sheni, Lo Etrichu Rabbanan Be'Aveda Yoser, Yoser Midai. Rava is saying, forget about Bais Rishon, forget about Bais Sheni. As far as Rabbi Yehuda's din is concerned, you know what? In both periods of time, Bais Rishon, Bais Sheni, 3 days for travel in each direction was sufficient. And the Rabbanan didn't want to be matriach, the person who found the object, in an excessive way, and have him wait for such a long period of time after the yontif. You know, he wants to go back home to his family, but you're telling him after the regal, stay on for a long period of time. Okay, aveda is a great mitzvah, but the Rabbanan are not going to unduly burden a person who found the lost object and tell him that, you know, he's got to wait a longer period of time. 7 days is enough. That's long enough. To expect the finder and impose upon him an obligation to wait 15 days after the Chag, I mean, he too wants to get home, simply because he found an object, which is a Shavah Pruta, that's going too far. That Tircha the Rabbanan did not want to impose on him, and therefore they took the, a certain sense, a minimum kind of shear of 3 days, and therefore be machriz on the 7th day. Omer Avinu Shma Mina, from our Mishnah, that gives a zman for the Baal Aveda, just to give him time to get home and to get back. They didn't give him longer, you know, longer period of time to wait, you know, to check his house, examine every nook and cranny, see what he's losing. Is therefore it must be that ki machriz glima machriz. When the finder makes his announcement, he's going to mention the name of the object that he found. He's not going to just say in a general sense, Matsasi Aveda, but rather he's going to say, Matsasi Talis, I found the Talis. And therefore, when the Ma'abed, the Bailim, goes back, you know, to look through his belongings and see if he lost something, etc., etc., he doesn't need more than just that very same day in which he arrived. He got back home on the 3rd day, and that's when he turns around and goes back another 3-day journey in order to retrieve his object. The Isal Kedaita, you're going to say the other way around, that the Hakroz is not Glima, but Avidita Machriz. He just says in a general sense, non-committal. He says, I found an Aveda, lost object. Is then Be'inon Lemitfele Chadyoma Leyune Bimane. Then Ravina says you're going to have to add an extra day to give a longer one extra day of opportunity for the Baal Aveda, the owner of the lost object, to check and see amongst his chafots, amongst his objects, what he lost. Did he lose anything? Elishma mina glima machriz. We must derive from Ravina's presentation that the finder will announce a specific, you know, the specific name of the class of Aveda, the object that he found, because otherwise you've got to give the Bailim a lot more time to go through all of their materials, all of their properties, in order to decide if they lost something or not. Ushma mina, and that's what we're going to derive of that glima's machriz. And this, by the way, is a machlokes on Amud Beis, which we didn't get to yet, between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Nachman, whether or not it's enough to say Matzasi Aveda, Aveda Matzasi, or you have to say Matzasi Talis, you know, and name the specific object. Rava says that there's no proof one way or the other, because Afilu Tema Avidita Machriz, even if you'll argue that all he has to announce is Aveda Matzasi, Lo Trichu Rabbanav Aveda Yosemidai. There's a limit to how much they can superimpose upon the finder of the Aveda, and therefore they gave it 3 days, 3 days, and a seventh day. And after he makes his announcement on the seventh day, following Yontif, he can go home to his family, Baruch Hashem. More than that, we can't impose, even though, again, from the perspective of the Baal HaVeda, the one who lost it, he really needs a lot more time. But we're not going to afford him that time. He's going to have to work overtime. When he gets home after the three-day journey, he's got nothing else in his mind but just to figure out if he lost anything. And Rav is defending the possibility that the Hachroza doesn't have to be with the Shema Chefetz. You don't have a proof from here, says Rav, like Rav Nachman, who says that you have to announce the name of the Chefetz, but rather it could be like the Shita Rabbi Yehuda, that we'll see, that you could just say in a general sense, Aveda, Aveda Matzasi.